We have about 2 minutes left just to make sure everyone's in the right room. We're going to be talking about developing apps for SharePoint 2013. If you've seen apps before and seen developing apps on SharePoint, what we're going to do is walk through. We talk about 0 to 60. It's really getting you up to speed very, very quickly on what it takes to build apps. So we're going to do like a really broad overview. Hopefully we'll hit something for everybody's taste for the different audiences. But if you've seen this before and you're looking for something deeper, this is not going to be like a 300 or 400 level deep session. We do have some code samples. We do have some examples of apps. We are going to walk through some of the apps. But if you're looking for like a really deep, deep session, there's another one coming up on Friday that's going to walk through some of that. So just to set expectations. How many folks have built apps already on SharePoint? A few folks.
So we'll get these two guys up here?
Yeah.
And we'll
share your experiences with us?
Yeah. Well, you guys can ask some questions.
Brand new to apps. Who is brand new to SharePoint 2013 apps? I have no idea what you're talking about, Mr. Speaker. Great. If I get it wrong, most of the audience is going to be happy because they won't be able to correct me.
What about the IT pros in the room versus developers? Are there IT pros that are looking at kind of managing apps? Okay, we'll talk to you offline.
A few folks.
But what we will do for the rest of you is we'll kind of tell you how to pitch it and sell it to the IT guy to get it deployed into your environment. So we'll give you little tips and tricks on selling it.
Yep. All right, let's go ahead and get started. Welcome to day two of Tech Ed Europe. I got to say that I'm very excited about the weather. The weather has been fantastic the last few days. We've done a lot of sightseeing. Hopefully you've been able to get out and see some sights if you're not from around here. It's definitely beautiful, beautiful country, beautiful history, beautiful architecture. It's awesome. I am based out of Tampa, Florida in the United States. My name is Israel Vega. I'm an independent consultant. And with me on stage is Nathan Miller. He works for Microsoft. And both of us are going to spend the next 75 minutes talking to you about SharePoint apps. Again, we're going to give you a broad overview of everything that you're going to need for apps. We're going to teach you what are the development tools, how do you debug a little bit, right? What are the different things that you have to think about when you're looking at the architectural points of view? What is an app? I'll talk quickly about what an app. We'll talk about app shapes, app deployment, different app architectures. Again, broad overview. We've got something for hopefully everyone.
Yeah, and we kind of put this content together based on a lot of the questions that we got asked in kind of previous sessions that we've done, you know, through the Ignite trainings and through the Dev Camp. So this was kind of a consolidation of really a lot of that content to get kind of what are the common misconceptions or what are the common questions that we get. So that's what we kind of focused on in this deck and also on the demos that we're going to show you.
Yep. So when you walk out, what we want to do is make sure that you can at least answer some of these questions. So if someone talks to you about apps, you can talk to your organization, you can talk to your friends or your children about the application model. I'm sure your kids like to hear about the app model. Yeah? My kids enjoy. No, they don't.
My wife does not like me talking about apps at all.
When you walk out as well, we want you to understand the different hosting models. There are three different hosting models that we're going to discuss. And just know the differences. What are the pros and cons between them? You'll also understand how to develop, how to get started, how to build, what are the different tools that I need. A little bit about permissions and security. We'll talk about apps, common misconceptions on there about what apps can do, what apps can't do, what's available and not available. And then we'll touch on deployment. We'll talk a little bit about different catalogs, how to get these things deployed, how to get them in your organization, how to purchase them from the store. We'll talk about that as well. We're not going to go deep on the deployment side, but again, broad brush. We're going to touch on all the different things. This is going to give you a really broad overview about apps, and you'll know a lot about apps.
Yeah, so this is actually something we also have a giveaway. And I don't know if you guys have been to the site, but they do SharePoint branding. And so one of the things that we'll do at the end of the session is if you've got good questions, we've got two of these custom branded themes that have master pages, kind of full responsive design. And we'll give two of those out to people in the audience.
The two representatives on stage do not work for Binding Tuning.
No,
the Binding Tuning is making no money. They're not paying us. We're not authorized representatives of Binding Tuning.
That's right.
There's the legal ease.
Just
okay, so what did Microsoft think about when they went back and said, what are we going to do with the platform, right? What's next? When you look at today's market, a lot of people have Office. There's a copy of Office sold, I think it's what, every 5 minutes or something like that. It's some strange number like that. And when you look at the number of SharePoint developers, there's lots of SharePoint developers out there, a lot of people building on a platform. A lot of these Different applications that they deployed were full trust applications, things that were on the server. So when you think about it from an IT perspective, from an upgrade perspective, it's very difficult, right? A lot of these things were entrenched in your organization. They were very hard to deploy, very hard to manage, very hard to support. The other thing Microsoft looked at is the trends. What's going on in the marketplace? Who are the developers that are building? Not only today, but let's look, you know, 3 years out, 5 years out. And what are the, what I call them, the cool kids? What are the cool people doing in the next 3 to 5 years? And what Microsoft saw was HTML5 and CSS was just ubiquitous. Everyone's using jQuery. Everyone's using HTML. Everyone's using this kind of plug-in model to apps, app-like things. If you're using Facebook, I age myself a little bit. I'll akin it to GeoCities. Anyone remember GeoCities? A few folks, right? GeoCities, you put a little iframe tag and you actually were able to get some of this functionality. Very similar to that, right? I have a platform and I plug things in. The other thing I looked at was the principles around managing a cloud architecture. It's very difficult to manage a cloud architecture at scale within your organization. So let's say you have a 3,000-person organization, even a 50,000 or 250,000-person organization. Very hard and difficult an architecture that very hard to, and to manage an architecture like that. When you think about the cloud, what's millions and millions of tenants, millions and millions of upgrades, and the fact that Microsoft was looking at this and saying, what can we do to help make it more agile? One of the things they noticed was we have to get the code off the server. We have to be able to have a pluggable model because we still realize that customers want to extend. But how do we do that, right? And how do we also give choice to developers that are actually building that, building those applications? Here's what they came up with. They came up with a new cloud model. It's brand new. The other thing that they came up with was this marketplace. They realized that, hey, there's a bunch of developers out there that are, they want to get their applications out to organizations, but they might not necessarily work for that organization. They might work for some other company. They might be developers at home that just want to build apps, and I want to be able to deploy them without having a relationship with that particular customer. So they wanted to build this marketplace. And there's this marketplace of being able to go out, purchase apps. From a developer point of view, it's a place for you to make some money. If you're really excited about building apps and you're really good at building apps, you can actually make money on this platform. Take your SharePoint application and publish it out to the marketplace. And now is a place for you to sell your goods. So that's great. Let's look at some examples of what these apps look like. So here I have a developer tenant. We'll show you a little bit later on how to get this. In this case here, it's just developer tenant. One thing we want to definitely make sure that we talk about, I'm going to navigate over to site context, and we're going to see add an app. Now, if you notice, if you've been around SharePoint for a while, you look at some of these things and you go, that's not an app. I know what that is. That's a document library. That's a style library. That is not an app. You are not trying to fool me. What they're trying to do for end users, right, before it was very difficult to understand, hey, go to this site, add this document library, add this thing, add this, that. Let's fix the nomenclature, right? Let's make it so that everything you add is an app. And essentially, end users will now understand, oh, I'm plugging something into my site, right? I'm not deploying something. I'm not activating something. I am plugging something into my site. So in this case here, I'm going to go ahead and add an app. And what you'll notice on the screen here is there are different places you can take apps from. There's apps you can add from your organization, so there's an app catalog, and we'll talk about how to do that. If you deploy applications within your organization, you can get those out to your end users. And there's another thing down at the bottom there called the SharePoint Store. That's the marketplace I hinted to. So we'll go over to the SharePoint Store.
And one of the common misconceptions that we've got, we certainly have a SharePoint Store for offering up these applications, but it really is about governance and how you want to manage your applications within your corporation as well. Mm-hmm. And that's why when Israel goes into like the corporate catalog, I mean, that's really what, from an individual organization standpoint, you're really looking at kind of a governance model of deploying and managing apps for different groups within the organization.
Mm-hmm. And if you're an IT pro and you realize how hard this was in the past, you'd probably work with some developers, you work with a consultant like myself, we'll come in, we'll build some applications. 3, 6, maybe 9 months down, sometimes never for some big organizations. Finally, I give you a WSP as an IT pro, and then you deploy it to your site, and then it works. Well, in this case here, I'm going to go out to the store. We'll go ahead and click on one of these here. Click on Bright Banner. Now, what I have from a governance standpoint is I'm allowing my end users to navigate to the store, but I'm not allowing my end users to purchase anything. What I'm doing is I'm allowing them to request it. And that's something that Microsoft added based on feedback. Really, it's to help bridge the gap, right? We want to show end users what they can do. We want to show them the possibility of what they can add to their site, but I may not necessarily want them to automatically add things to the site, so I want them to be able to request it. And so maybe, there's a whole request model built in.
And it's possible that you might have a back billing model too, right? So if there's a cost to some of these apps, maybe you actually are billing it to that department or that organization that wants the app.
Yeah, so here I can see the different app, and we'll see the different app shapes. Here we have a full screen app. We have a app part, and I'll talk a little bit about that as well, about what these things are. But that's the app store. I'll go over to the site here. What I've done is I've captured the corporate news application from the store, downloaded it. What you're seeing here is an app part. And an app part is essentially a web part. So if I go to edit page, you'll see that it's a web part. I can edit the web part. I've got properties that are associated with that. The other thing that I have in here is I have the ability to insert other things. So I click on the Insert tab, Insert App Part. And what you'll notice is there's a combination of web parts that are deployed on SharePoint and also web parts that are available in the store. So in my case here, I've got the Carousel News App part. That is something that I downloaded from the store. So there's a way to add additional functionality to your site. And again, as IT pros and as SharePoint people, this is all natural to us, right? We're used to adding things. But from an end user standpoint, they really don't know why you can't deliver that particular piece of functionality. Now is a possibility to do that. You can just take that, make it available out to the either corporate catalog or the store, and end users can now plug those in and enhance their sites a lot faster than what they used to do. Go ahead and we'll save this. That's one shape, which is the app part shape. The other shape that we have is a full screen shape. This is where an application kind of takes up the entire screen. Nathan will talk about how to build these different shapes, but that's just kind of the different views that these apps can have. There's an app part, which is just something that gets embedded into your page. This is a full screen view, right? So I can have a full screen app. So if I have a piece of functionality that I want to show at a larger screen with a larger resolution, I can do it this way. If I have a small piece of functionality, I can deploy an app part and do that as well. All right. There we go. So what does that look like from an architecture standpoint? In the background, what we're doing is we have a thing called the SharePoint App Web Runtime. And the App Web is a web that gets deployed in your SharePoint site collection, but it's a separate kind of isolated app web. It's not something that end users can necessarily access, but it's something that from a development point of view, that's where things get deployed to. They get deployed to this app web. And again, Nathan will talk more in detail about what this is. Behind the scenes, the way that you're going to talk to SharePoint is through APIs, JSON or JavaScript object model. You're going to use CSOM, which is the client-side object model. You're also going to use REST. And these are all things that if you're using jQuery, using HTML today, and CSS, you're already used to doing this for other services. Now you're able to talk to SharePoint in the same way. Because it's SharePoint, we also have the ability to do BCS. And deploying BCS models and BCS applications as apps, these are also things that you have access to. You can have those BCS models point to different data sources, those things. So from a hybrid point of view, can you talk quickly about kind of these hybrid apps and these hybrid architectures that we now have?
Yeah, so a lot of times what we'll have is a combination of some of the org wants to move to the cloud, or we might have some workloads that are in the cloud, but we also have a lot of applications that are going to be on-premise. So we might have legacy applications. And this model, and we'll talk a little bit more about this later, but this model is very good for doing hybrid scenarios where maybe I've got an ERP system, and I actually just need to quickly publish that information up into SharePoint. I don't want to rewrite it all to be a SharePoint app. But I can basically make it a provider-hosted app and have hooks in there so that it's surfaced up through my portal, whether that's in Office 365 or whether that's on-premise. And we'll kind of go through more of the details of how that happens.
Yep. But now what this does is it makes SharePoint a kind of a truer platform than it is, the next-generation platform, because now you're able to take SharePoint data, integrate it with external services, and create these mashups that everyone's really been doing today and been asking for for a lot of times, when I talk to my customers, these are the types of apps that they've been wanting to build. These are the types of apps we've been building in a full trust way. But from an upgrade standpoint, it's a blocker. So the benefits to the app model, one of the big things is that it's not an upgrade blocker. Right? The fact that the app is a kind of a bolt-on, it's something that ends up on the side or next to SharePoint, is perfect because I'm not deploying bits on the server. I'm not deploying anything physically on the server. What's actually getting deployed is really a pointer to a start page. And that start page can be running either on the SharePoint box or it could be running somewhere else, completely separate architecture. Could be in Azure, could be in your virtualization host of choice, could be built on the platform of your choice. Mm-hmm. So if you're using PHP, you can do that. Right? If you have a legacy ASP application, take that ASP application, build a SharePoint app. Now you can expose it in your portal, take advantage of all the SharePoint UI and the SharePoint goodness, but still keep that legacy application built in the tool that tool of choice. The other thing that this model does is it allows you to reduce the ramp-up time. So you had to be SharePointy to build SharePoint apps. You had to really speak SharePoint language. You had to understand features and WSPs. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, that's exactly what I'm talking about. It was it was very difficult to build SharePoint applications. Well, now if you know a little bit of HTML5, you know REST, if you can speak to regular APIs in that model, you can get JSON back and you really understand XML.
Or straight.NET.
Or straight.NET. I mean, yeah. If you're strongly typed, as I say, versus weakly typed on the JavaScript side, you can still build applications. So as a SharePoint developer, your skills are still needed, right? You're still going to be building applications. But if you're not a SharePoint developer and you're brand new to it, but you know HTML5, you know JavaScript and jQuery, there's a place for you as well. So come to the table. We'll all join in SharePoint. All right, some other benefits. We talked about the low-cost entry for developers. Isolation, there's always this concept of private clouds versus public clouds and, you know, what's a cloud? Is it my cloud? Is it your cloud? In general, when we think about this, it's really who hosts your cloud, right? Is it Office 365 and Microsoft is hosting your cloud? Is it you that's hosting kind of your cloud architecture? Or is it both? Are you doing something on-prem and something in the cloud? And you want to kind of merge these worlds together some way. From an isolation standpoint, the apps give you a good point of distinction. I'm going to surface the user interface in one place, but the actual application runs somewhere else. So my farm won't go down. If that other app is having a problem, my farm is still running. In order to get this set up, how do I get started building applications? First thing you're going to do is you're going to provision a developer tenant. These are free. So you go out there to dev.office.com, and once you're out on dev.office.com, and actually I'll walk you through that in a little bit, you'll be able to provision a developer tenant. If you have an MSDN subscription, you already have this benefit today, so you should definitely take advantage of it. It's very simple to build. There's actually a JavaScript JavaScript browser-based model called Napa, and you can build SharePoint apps in the browser. And we'll show you what that looks like. So here, if you go to dev.office.com, what will be displayed is this section here with a big button called Start. And when you click on that Start button, where you're going to go is you're going to get this step-by-step on how to sign up for an Office 365 developer site.
Yeah, and I think the important thing here is even a lot of you guys are going to be running on-prem. But this is still a very valuable tool set for you to have because basically it gives you a full set of SharePoint, Link, Exchange, and the Office client for you to use for your development environment. Mm-hmm. And I'll show you in the code. Basically, there's a security switch ongoing 365 versus on-prem in some scenarios, and I'll show you what that switch is. But basically, if you want a prototype or if you want to get a 2013 site stood up very quickly mm-hmm. and start testing stuff, this is a great way to do it. So I highly recommend this to all my customers, and all of them that are even doing labs environments on-premise are still doing this because it's much quicker and much faster for them to kind of prototype and test different things.
And once you get your developer tenant, what you'll get provisioned, as Nathan mentioned, you'll get a full kind of a full SharePoint instance. You get Exchange, you get Link, You get SharePoint. You get the ability to build applications.
And it's the enterprise SharePoint. It's the E3 on Office 365, but it's all the enterprise capabilities with SharePoint as well.
And you get this app. If you don't have this app, the Napa app, what you can do is go out, add an app, and then go ahead and add the Napa app. I've already added it to my application. Napa's interesting because it's an app that allows app developers to build apps, and it's deployed like an app. So that means you'll get all the benefits of having it revved, right? People can update it behind the scenes. The Microsoft team can add some additional functionality, and you'll just get it because it's deployed as an app. And here, I'm going to go ahead and add a new project. What you'll notice here is that I can add not just apps for SharePoint, but I can also add apps for Office. Yesterday, we had a talk on apps for Office. Myself and Richard talked about apps for Office, so if you want to go back and check the replay of that if you didn't see it, we gave you a really good overview on how to build apps for Office. In this case here, we're going to build an app for SharePoint. And I will call it SharePoint App 5 because I'm not that creative. And here we're inside of the Napa app, and what you'll see is there is a little bit of ASP and a little bit of SharePointiness running around in here, but it's not a lot. Most of what you're going to see is HTML, right? There's a div. There's some information about displaying some things. There's this tab called the scripts. And here in the scripts, really this is kind of the brains behind how this application runs. When this initializes, this script runs, and it's all JavaScript running client-side. All right, so here what we're doing is the sample Hello World app goes out to a, gets installed into a SharePoint site, and all it does is get the username. But what it shows very quickly, if I were to deploy this to my tenant, what it shows is I can get up and running very fast, deploying something on SharePoint, accessing SharePoint data in probably 5 minutes. Right, which if you're a SharePoint person, you go, there's no way you can do this in 5 minutes. I can't do anything in SharePoint in 5 minutes. From an app standpoint, I can just deploy this. If you're building this on a Mac using Napa, it used to be that if you had a Mac, I had to deploy SharePoint. I maybe have to use Bootcamp or Parallels. But now what I can do is I can actually use a Napa in the browser using Chrome or Firefox. Don't use Safari. But what does this what does this Napa app also provide me? It gives me the ability to see things. I get IntelliSense, right? I don't know if you can see that there, but I get IntelliSense in the browser. Like I'm getting JavaScript IntelliSense in the browser, which is pretty awesome. So I'm able to, you know, just regular select elements. Let's pretend I had a content tab in there, right? Full IntelliSense. Right, it's pretty cool. I'm getting IntelliSense in the browser. So it's a low-cost barrier of entry. I don't even need a hardcore machine. I can run this on a tablet, or I can build applications on a Surface. So very good. All right, we'll flip back. Let me go back to that slide. Give me one sec. It jumped ahead. That's great, Israel, but what about on-prem, right? I'm on-prem. I want to be able to build SharePoint apps on-prem. There's a different set of tools that I can use on-prem. Nathan's going to walk through what that setup looks like. Just because I'm building applications using Napa, that's just a starting point. I can also jump off from Napa into Visual Studio and get a very hardcore IDE environment, integrate that into my SharePoint, into my TFS source control, and still do kind of the more heavy things that I need to do in full IDE. So I still have access to that using the Visual Studio developer tools for SharePoint and Office.
That's right. And on the Visual Studio side, we're going to show that. But basically, it doesn't matter if it's on your developer tenant or if it's on-premise. You can actually target that same tool set in either environment. All right, so when we talk about the hosting model, the first model that we look at is really the SharePoint hosted app. This is actually an application that's just JavaScript and HTML5. So making kind of calls in the JavaScript libraries, making calls in the SharePoint library, and that's actually the SharePoint hosted model. The auto-hosted model is actually just for Office 365. So this is actually where we actually bundle the database, we bundle the .NET solution as well, and we host it all for you. You don't have to worry about, okay, what server is this going to? How am I going to host this environment? How am I going to deploy the database? It's all auto-hosted for you. So it's a very quick way to get started. The reason why I call this out is even if you're doing on-premise, I highly recommend if you're getting started, auto-hosted, and you're doing .NET code, auto-hosted is a great way to go. You can actually have an MVC app in there. You can have a database provisioned in there. And it's a really good way to get started to understand how the app model works and how you can make calls into SharePoint and vice versa into your app. Finally, the last model is a provider-hosted model. The provider-hosted model is where basically it's a bring-your-own infrastructure. So we'll have basically the framework for you. You'll have a SharePoint project as kind of in the SharePoint-hosted land. But also with the provider-hosted model, you'll also have a full .NET project or a Java or PHP project that you're hosting somewhere else that we're actually making calls into with web parts or calls into with web pages as well. So when we kind of look at the comparison of the models, SharePoint-hosted model, basically, you know, when we look at the scope of this, whenever you install a SharePoint-hosted model, it's basically a per-site install. So basically that corporate news app, if I install that in another app, if I adjust headline news for one site, it actually doesn't adjust it across all of them. Each one is its own instance of lists and databases that go along with it. From the cloud-hosted side, it can be a site level if it's auto-hosted, or it can actually be a full tenant level as well. So, you know, it really is up to how you guys want to manage the database and the context of a tenant in there. From an architectural standpoint, in the case of SharePoint-hosted, it's website. On the cloud-hosted, really, again, is up to you. You could actually have it for multiple departments, multiple companies. If you have co-companies or you're giving your app out to multiple people, you can do that as well. From a developer skill set, it really comes down to a full stack if you're doing a cloud-based model. If you want to do .NET, it is provider-hosted or auto-hosted. You're not really looking at SharePoint-hosted at that point. So there's a lot of confusion a lot of times where, you know, people think about the classic models as SharePoint-hosted. That's true, but when we talk about SharePoint-hosted in this model, we're not talking about .NET code or managed code with that. So again, so obviously no server code with that. From a storage standpoint, if you're SharePoint hosted, your storage is really lists and libraries. And I'll show you an app that I did that's actually making use of cache on a current list for that. But on the auto-hosted and provider-hosted, which are really identical from an infrastructure standpoint or from a coding standpoint, it really is anything. You can use SQL Server. You can actually use cloud services or anything else that you want to use for that. And then also from a standpoint of what it's good for, and I'll show you demos where I think each of them kind of fit. But for SharePoint-hosted applications, it's good for pulling in third-party feeds, like news feeds, weather feeds, stock tickers, things within SharePoint. If you want to do different UIs on top of data or lists, the SharePoint-hosted app is very good for those types of things. But we're really looking at kind of smaller applications with, you know, a subset or a limited set of storage. For the cloud-hosted apps, that's really where we're looking at the larger line of business applications or the kind of more flexible applications where you're just writing .NET code, MVC patterns, things like that is really this cloud-hosted model. And when we say cloud, by the way, we don't mean necessarily that it has to live outside your organization. Cloud is really that it lives outside of SharePoint. So just kind of keep that in mind. So everyone's breathing easy. I don't know what that meant. All right, so just real quick, and I'll actually go into the SharePoint-hosted app models. But when we're looking at a SharePoint-hosted app, it's JavaScript, HTML5, and we're communicating with SharePoint through CSOM and REST API calls. And we'll show you what that looks like. And then, so a lot of times, if you have developers that aren't .NET or Java developers, or even PHP developers, this is a good way to push them. NAPA tools and this is kind of a good way to go. But you can certainly use the full Visual Studio experience as well. The other thing that I'm going to show you, when we go through the apps, and I'll oftentimes forget to point this out, but what you'll notice in each app that gets deployed, it actually has its own URL on there. So when you look at the application part, when you dissect that URL, there's an application ID that gets automatically generated or assigned, and then there's a basically an app prefix to that. So in the 365 land or your developer tenant, it actually gives it a tenant. If you run that on-premise, you have to set what that, that app prefix is for your SharePoint environment. And then the app name is up to you on whatever you're going to set the app name to be. So there's actually some, for on-premise stuff, there's some forwarding DNS rules, but there's a lot of good blog entries on how to set those DNS forwarding rules and how to do the wildcards on that.
You're on one.
All right, so we're going to actually take a look at the first SharePoint hosted app. So I'm going to open up Visual Studio, and I'll actually go into a weather app that I did. So this is actually just a very simple weather app. It's just using HTML5 and JavaScript, jQuery, to actually call into a hosted service that provides weather information. The other thing that I do with this is, because I'm cheap and I don't want to pay for the weather service, I actually want to cache that set, so I'm not hitting that service all the time. So what I have is a SharePoint list that I'm actually using the client-side object model for to actually do some caching of that data, and I'll show you what that looks like as well. So the first thing that you do, if you're hooked up into developer tenant, it's going to ask you for login to that tenant. The reason why it does that in Visual Studio is it actually uses that tenant to get the content types and get any kind of configuration that it needs from the server side. So when I'm adding new lists to my project, it actually has the right content types and what's available to me based on my developer site. Go ahead and sign in. So when we look at the solution in Visual Studio, the layout of a SharePoint hosted app is exactly what Israel showed you on the Napa tools. It's just on the Visual Studio side. So you'll notice here, first off, let me actually zoom it up. So you'll notice in here that the first thing that you note is, and you'll see this more on the other apps, but you see the little SharePoint logo on the app side. So that's actually your SharePoint app project for the project. And you'll see when we do the solutions, you'll see that I've got my .NET project, and then I've got my SharePoint hosted project. So the other kind of misconception that I've got is every project will have a SharePoint piece to that. So any kind of piece that gets deployed, the hooks, the web parts, all go in the SharePoint side. So if you ever want to say, okay, you know, we need to add managed code to this now, I can always go add a project to this, and it becomes an auto-hosted project then, or a provider-hosted project, and I can actually deploy managed logic onto this. So if you ever grow outside this, so if there's a designer that says, hey, I've got this weather thing, or I've got this this form project, but we need it to do this workflow now, you can always actually go in here, and then in this project, I can actually go and just add a new project to it and add a web project. And when I do that, it actually will make the hooks for me and then actually does all the OAuth for me so that I don't have to do all that configuration, which is really nice. All right, so in this project, a couple things. We just have a default page that basically is just kind of the default rendering page. In here, I've just got some simple template for HTML that I'm actually setting the weather queried information that I get back from my service. But the other thing I wanted to do is I actually put it in a web part. In the web part, we're going to talk about this later, but we actually make a call to a styles web service so that we actually get the styling. So that as you're putting web parts in there, if you've got legacy server calls that you're making, we actually go out and get the SharePoint styles on the site that you're on, and we actually style out the fonts and whatnot so that it looks like part of the solution or part of the portal, even though that's actually living on another server somewhere else. And we're going to talk about the app manifest a little bit more, but the app manifest is kind of what brings everything together. So this is really what defines the permissions that the app needs, and it defines a lot of the launching page of the app. So kind of the first thing that you'll notice is this app actually launches to a default page. But it's got the weather, it's got the information. It's a SharePoint hosted app. You know, we can actually switch that. If we actually added another project to it, it would automatically switch that. Right now it's just a SharePoint hosted app. You'll notice also on the permissions, I'm doing writes to the list, but I don't need permission at this point because actually all the lists that I'm doing, I'm actually deploying with my application. So I have full control over the application, the SharePoint app that I'm hosting. So the other thing on this application is we've got in the content, we have a list, the weather cache. So the weather cache list, I'm actually using our new list designer, and I'm actually deploying a weather cache list with that. So this is actually how you're going to manage, if you're doing SharePoint side data, this is actually how you'd manage that. Create your list, create your content types, that all gets deployed with your application. When you remove your application, those go away. So kind of be careful of that. It's not stuff that you want to, if it's stuff that you need to keep around permanently, you don't want to actually have it in here because if you remove your app, all that stuff goes away.
And that's a good thing, right? What we want is we want to not leave remnants of your application on the SharePoint side. So it's very good that this thing kind of cleans up. But from an architecture standpoint, from a development standpoint, just keep that in mind, that if I deploy something to SharePoint, if I deploy some list assets, some content types, those are my content types that go with my app. And what I when I leave, I should not there should not be any remnants of myself. I shouldn't they shouldn't know I was there, like a ninja type thing. Right?
Whenever Israel leaves, we always know he was there.
Yes, and we don't want that.
Okay, so a couple things I'm going to show you, and then I'll jump into kind of the running of the app. But if you look at this application, it's fairly simple. What I end up doing is I first go and check when I do the retrieve of weather. I actually check a weather cache. So basically, if you look at that context, so I have client context, and I've got the sp.clientContext.getCurrentContext. So if you kind of think about how we do queries in SharePoint, is we get the current established context of what site am I on, you know, what kind of what user am I running as. And then you see in that next line where I've got the list, I can actually get a list by title. So now I can actually iterate through the list. I can do reads and writes from that list. It's still, we can actually use camel to do that. So you see my camel query where I'm actually getting the first value off of that because it's only going to cache one level of weather for that. And just to kind of show you how we do the reads. So you see on here, I'm actually getting that list. I've got, I iterate through the list values, and then you'll see each of the fields that I'm grabbing from that list. And now I can actually use that and set that in my my web page itself. So I have a weather object in there that I'm setting the properties for, and then I'm actually just doing the call for the weather. If I now, if I didn't return anything, or if I returned something that was older than 10 minutes in this case, I actually just go down and call the web service again. So you see I've got the underground web service for weather that I call, and I actually pass it an address, and it actually returns me the weather for that. I'm using the same objects, and I just write that to the list after I actually make the web service call for the weather. So what that looks like is when I actually go to the dev site, you actually see the weather on there. But in this case, it doesn't make much sense to be a full-fledged app, right? You really want that to be just web parts in your page. So what I tend to do on my dev clients, and I highly recommend this, is create a web part test page where you can actually just test the web parts. Don't put it on your default page because you always end up with issues, and then you got to kind of figure out how to get to remove that web part. So on this test page, I can go into my page, and I can edit it, and then I can go in and insert that SharePoint app part. So you see on mine, I've got weather. And I didn't change the title, so still weather web part title. Right. And then went in out there, grabbed the service, it's got the cached of the data. It looks like back home it's 82 degrees Fahrenheit right now. So, one other thing to note is I'll show you real quick also on the debugging. So it's an F5 experience. Regardless of where I'm actually out in the cloud, I don't have to worry about kind of attaching to processes. I can actually just hit this. Let me get off this page. So if I go ahead and hit start debug, I can. It's basically, if you notice that out there at the bottom here, it's doing the uninstall of the app, and then it's actually going to go ahead and deploy that application again, connect me to it, and I can actually debug the JavaScript or the HTML right in my browser. If I've got .NET code associated to that as well, it will attach to those processes, and I can debug those as well. It's really nice on that side because it actually does a local host for any of the services calls that I'm making for managed code. So there it goes. So you notice that it went ahead and installed that, and then it actually launches. So you see the website, the tenant, and you notice that URL. So it actually installed that, created that website for that application, and then actually launches into a browser for me to log in and actually test my code then. Okay, so go ahead and do this. And then I go into my weather application, and then I hit the breakpoints in my script. So it's a really nice, easy experience to get started. It's something that, like I said, if you go out there and deploy it, there's labs downstairs on this too. I definitely highly recommend you do this as SharePoint hosted. If you've got .NET experience, then definitely go into the auto host and try it. It's the same exact experience. It's a really nice kind of environment. Okay. Let me stop this. So some of the app shapes that we saw that Israel was shown and I was shown is there's basically three kind of shapes that you look at in the project. So we first have the full app experience. So a lot of times if you have maybe a legacy application and your manager comes to you and says, hey, we need everything to be in the portal. Well, this is kind of a good way to cheat. I mean, this is a great way to go, you know what? We actually need the current user. We need to pass it to there, to the application. We just need to have that experience where they're easily kind of hooking up and having kind of every experience go through there. So this is actually a good way to do it. It's also a lot of applications just make sense to be a full-fledged app. And we'll talk a little bit more about how we can actually style that and make that look like it's part of the portal, even though it's running in a full page experience. We also have the app parts. So we saw the web parts that we did. Well, they're app parts now. And so we can actually add those and make multiple ones on a page. The other one that we had, and I don't know if we showed this, but the extension app. So the extension app is basically if I have actions that I need to take on list items or documents, an extension app is what that is. So basically it's custom actions in kind of previous versions, and it launches into workflows or it launches into your app from a certain type of,
Let me just show that real quick. All right, so what I've done is I've deployed an application from the store, and the application is called the AdLib application. What it does is it allows you to take a bunch of documents and convert them to PDFs. This is the extension app. So what it does is it actually installs an app, but the app really is the side actions or custom ribbon commands. So as an app developer, you know, now you can have these full-fledged experiences where you're acting with SharePoint, feels like SharePoint, looks like SharePoint, but actually if that app were to go away, that ribbon extension would be gone. And all the app information will be gone as well.
Yep. All right, so the other thing we're going to talk about is branding experiences. And so when we look at the branding of our applications, whether it's legacy full-fledged app or if it's some other types of applications, we've got kind of three options that you've got. You've got the application template, where basically we have a kind of full-page experience where you have a master page in there, and you can have any kind of styling that you want to do with that. We also have the custom Chrome control. So this is basically if I've got an application, I want to put a div tag on there, and I want the Chrome experience, so it looks like the SharePoint menus. But it's not really running on SharePoint land at all. It's basically an application that's PHP, Java, or .NET. But I can actually have that still that menu bar, the Chrome, what we call the Chrome control, to have the menu options and setting options in there. And then finally, we have the custom branding, where basically it's brand it how you want. Maybe give your application kind of a life or brand of its own. So on the Chrome control, when we look at the Chrome control, that default CSS that I showed you. For setting that script up, there's basically simply a script that actually goes out there, grabs the default CSS from the current site that you're on, and sets that Chrome control. So if you change the style or the colors of your site, that Chrome control changes with that. So the applications that get launched from there have that different style and different colors with that as well. So it also applies the style sheets from that page onto your application pages. So again, it doesn't look like it's different applications that are running with 10 different kinds of fonts and styles. It actually makes it look like it's one kind of fluid experience regardless of how you're launching or regardless of where that application is living. And then also, we can actually add custom nodes to this. And I'll show you what that looks like as well. But basically, in the settings, we can have other options or other types of settings that might be logical for your application. So we can actually add that experience as well. So one of the other important things is when your application's running outside of SharePoint, if it's a SharePoint type of application, you need to make calls into SharePoint. So when the application's running, basically we need to have calls that are calling via CSOM or REST. And I showed you the CSOM model where we can call into lists or call into the current site. We could also do that through REST as well. And so basically when I'm calling into the SharePoint host, not necessarily the application that I'm running, but when I'm calling into the host, I actually need to grant it permission. I can't call read to a list without actually having that granted permission for that application. So basically, I have full control over everything in my application web, my app web, but basically when I call into the host web, I have to grant permission for everything within that SharePoint site or that tenant. I can't actually call profiles, for example, or search without that application being granted that permission and that user having that current permission to do that. So from this SharePoint APIs, we've got the client-side object model, so CSOM for managed code. So if I'm doing .NET development, we have that same managed code. So if you've done SharePoint development in the past, we basically mimic that same APIs. It's just a .client on each of the DLLs. And we've really done a great job of exposing kind of that full set of APIs. So it's a very easy switch to go from kind of legacy code to this new server model and use that in the C# model. From other models, we've got the JavaScript side. We have that same set in the JavaScript land that I showed you. And then we also have REST. And I tend to use REST quite a bit in a lot of these calls as well. And so that's another one that we have available to you. So it really is whatever makes sense for your application or the skill set, your developers that you're working with. So kind of an example of each of those types of calls. So we have the REST OData feeds. So one of the things that we have in here is basically when you look at the calls, the way we did it is we basically put a handler on all the server-side APIs. And so you see that underscore API, that's how we did it. So we just basically reroute to the server side, and we expose that to these client-side proxies. So that's kind of the REST call. You actually see that API call. The managed code is what I showed you before, which has client context, the load, and then we do the execute query to actually get that result sets back on the managed code side. So what you have to do differently is you have to actually accept the call, execute it, and then you actually access the objects that have that data from there. So within that, I can actually, after I make that execute query, I can say web.title, and then that has a value in it. Before that, that doesn't have a value before that execute query. And then finally, on the JavaScript side, we've got kind of that same exact model. It's just in the JavaScript code language. So app permissions, I'll show you what this looks like. But basically, when we look at app permissions, when we look at in the cloud or in Office 365, it's actually Azure ACS that's granting that permission. So we need to do a request when that application gets installed. It actually requests for the permission that it needs and lets the user or the admin know what types of permission that application needs to do. But then when it's actually happening, it's the application plus the user that's requiring that permission. So if the user doesn't have access to that permission, it doesn't basically elevate it in that mode. So here's what, when we look at the manifest, and we'll go into this in a little more detail, but basically on the manifest side, you can actually set the permissions. We'll add those permissions, and I'll show you what that looks like. When the permissions get added, so in this case, we've got web, user profiles, and tenant, and we've got read and write controls at each of those, you'll notice that we get a trust dialog on the right. So the trust dialog on the right is really, it tells you what types of permissions that application is requesting, and then you have to trust it in the application to actually have that application do the queries on the host web or on the tenant level itself.
This is very similar to the Facebook model where the you go out to Facebook or you go out to Twitter if you want to grant access to another application. Similar dialog box, similar experience. The application is going to ask for some permission. The user is going to get prompted. When the user clicks OK, then the application is able to do those types of activities.
So finally, after you've requested the permission, the way that you make calls back into SharePoint, you need a couple things. So the first off is you need to get the context token. So the way we do OAuth and the way we do permissions is after we've actually execute the application, we give you a token. And on that token basically allows you to establish context of that. So what you do is a validate of the token. So you get the token request, you do a validate with it, and then basically now I can actually use that token. And all we require you to do is basically take that same token and pass it back to us. So very similar if you've ever written a Facebook application, it kind of works the same way, or a LinkedIn application. All the OAuths kind of work the same way. So you notice on here that we've got client context, and then now we can take that client context and we can get the current user, and then we can actually execute that query to populate what that current user object is. So one other thing that we do, when you're running into these SharePoint applications, the managed applications, they're going to be running on a different server, whether that be in Azure, whether that be on another server set in your environment. They're essentially going to need to do cross-domain calls. So the way we do that is with an SP requester JS library. So what this does is it's not unique to SharePoint. It's just a cross-domain JavaScript issue that we've got. And it's just kind of in browser land. So what we did is we actually just took kind of the industry standard pattern and wrapped it into a JavaScript library. So we do the iframe and we do a post message and receive messages from that. So that's how we do the cross communication for these to go across the cross-domain calling issues. And kind of what that looks like then is, so we do the git script for the sprequester.js. And then on the calls that you'll see that we've got the application context where we can actually now pass and query into that application from a cross-domain type scenario. Now, you don't have to handle this scenario, obviously, in that first one that I did, because it's a SharePoint hosted, so I'm in the same domain. But if I actually had this with .NET hosted on-premise, where I had the .NET hosted in Azure, I would have to actually handle this kind of cross-domain problem that I've got on the JavaScript side, at least. So now we're going to look at doing auto-hosted apps and provider-hosted applications.
Why do I not know where yours is?
One.
You're one. There we go.
All right, so this next application that I'm going to pull up is, I'll actually show you the app so you can kind of see what it's doing. This application we use quite a bit internally. There's actually a couple blog posts on this as well, and you can get the code for this. Basically, one of the things that we do internally is called Kudos. And so what that is basically, hey, I want to give a thank you to an employee, and I want to use SharePoint to do that. So what we do is basically have a little message. Our application actually sends an email to your manager and sends an email to my manager to say, hey, I thanked you. You helped me out. This is a great thing. And so we see this a lot of times when people are deploying SharePoint and they want to do some more stuff on the social side or get more people involved. They really tend to like this type of application. And so we're seeing good adoption for things like this. But you'll notice on here I've got my newsfeed or the About Me. You'll see that we also post to the newsfeed in our application. So we can do writes to our profiles or to our newsfeeds. So applications can do that. And you'll see on here that you see that the application was posted based on the Kudos employee recognition application. So we do kind of postings of what to the different feeds. So down here I'll go ahead and go into the Kudos application. And so this, again, is sending kind of thank yous to different employees. And so you'll notice in here that I'm actually launching into a full screen view. So you see in here, I've got a full screen view. I also have the different page sets. So if I want to do different settings for badges or different settings for things that I want to allow people to grant access to, I can do that through the Chrome control that we've got. Let me go back. So in here, I'll go ahead and grant one real quick, and then I'll show you the code behind it. So this is actually using some SharePoint controls, some web parts, but it's also using a lot of .NET code. We're actually doing all the posting and whatnot in kind of managed .NET code. So in this case, I'll go ahead and we'll give Garth another present. So you see we've got kind of the people picker control in our application where we can do some queries and find different people in our organization. We'll do it to Garrett. And we'll say Garrett was a community hero. So we'll give him a little message. We'll send that, post to his wall, post to my wall, and then also would shoot maybe emails to the managers. So we'll go ahead and do that. You'll notice that it'll give kind of an update to the different the ones that I've sent, the ones that I've received, but then also on my wall, I actually get a posted update on there as well. So let's go ahead and jump into kind of the code and show how we do managed applications and certainly how auto-hosted applications in this case work. So one of the things to note is when we look at applications, whether it's an auto-hosted application or a provider-hosted application, if you're doing .NET code, it's identical. The code's the same. The development process, the deployment and debugging is all the same. So that's, again, it's why I really say, you know, it's a really good way, quick way to get started is if you're doing the developer tenant and the auto-hosted is a good way to kind of get started and kind of figure stuff out. And then you can kind of go from there and do provider-hosted and target Azure or target on-premise servers as well.
All right, while you're logging in, any questions so far on what you've seen, what you've heard? Anyone excited? All right, then we'll just cut to the chase. Who wants the custom blogging? Yep. They have to ask a question. Who wants the custom master page? No one wants a custom master page.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Regarding dependencies, you said that when you remove an app part, you're talking nonsense because I never wrote that thing for SharePoint. If I have an extension app which depends on another app, how can I remove
So the question is app dependencies, right? What if I have two applications that are dependent on each other? So we actually had a debate about this yesterday when we were talking through this. The idea is that while it is possible, it's not recommended unless you own both apps. And if you own both applications, then you have to ask yourself, well, can I just wrap this up into a single app and just add additional functionality? So what you don't want to do is take a dependency on someone else's app that provides something. While it's possible, you don't want to.
Yeah, so it really kind of depends on the deployment of the app in the scenario. In a lot of cases, we really kind of discourage building a ton of dependencies within apps. You know, there certainly will be back-end process dependencies and service dependencies. But when you look at kind of the UI constraints itself, definitely you want to kind of keep each application fairly independent with maybe some dependencies on services and whatnot. That said, there is a prerequisite inside of SharePoint as well. So there's also on the app manifest, you can actually have compatibility prerequisites as far as just base framework or base features that you need for it to operate. But I don't think you can register app dependencies on this. Yep. Richard, do you know on the prereq stuff?
Yeah. Not app dependencies.
It's only on kind of feature dependency stuff. Yeah, so that's a good. So that's a little more advanced than what we're going to go through in this talk. But basically, there's what's called app event receivers, where you can actually do checks yourself. So if you need to do custom checks, or you need to do custom deployment, or deployment, it's through the app event registry, and we're going to cover that on Friday. But it's a little deeper than kind of what we're going to cover in this session. But it's through the app event receivers, and through the event receivers in general.
All right. Yes, sir.
Yeah, good question. So on the
repeat the question.
Yeah, so the question is, if I've got content types and I'm deploying an app within there, how do I know that that's not going to step or cause an issue on the content types, right? So basically, if you've got the content types already established, your content type obviously is going to win over the application content type, so it's not going to step on anything. Also keep in mind that the context of the app, any kind of content types that it's got is within the realm of that application web. So, you know, we don't recommend that people do writes necessarily of content types outside of the app, but certainly you can go to the app event receiver and do additional checks and changes if you needed to do some kind of more advanced type scenarios. So let me go through this, and then we'll open it back up to questions. We've got a few more minutes, and then we'll kind of jump back into the question side. So on the first thing that we'll notice is when we look at the applications that we're building, we still have that SharePoint app. So kind of one of the common misconceptions that I've always had is, I don't want to necessarily be a SharePoint app. Well, everything is actually a SharePoint app if you're doing this model. You're going to have a project that's always SharePoint side. It may not have anything in there but a redirection, but everyone's going to kind of have that app web in the project side at least. So you'll see, and then it has the manifest, and it says how it's going to get deployed and what the redirection is whenever someone clicks that application. So the other thing that you'll notice is on that application, this is actually a provider-hosted application. So what we can do is we can specify a database project with that. So if you notice on here, I've got my database project. So what this means is when I package this application for deployment, I'm actually deploying a full database with that as well, or scripts with that as well. So it knows how to actually handle the packaging and deployment of my database, also of my website, my .NET website. So you see on the web project, I've got which project in my environment, in my solution, is my web project that I'm going to attach to debug with. So I've got that as well. So in here, I've got basically three projects. I've got my database project, I've got my my SharePoint project, and then I've got my web project that can be an MVC project or it can be a web forms project. I think in this one is just a web forms project. And then a couple other things to note in here is when I go into the scripts, we basically do that setup for the requester because we've got to set up the cross-domain. So we set up a proxy for that so that any calls that we make will actually run in the right context for that. So you see on here we've got basically context, the web proxy, and we set that basically on the context itself. So whenever we pass that context, we're actually using that cross-domain web proxy for establishing and making any of those cross-domain calls. And then kind of one of the other things that to kind of point out in here is the token helper is what's used on the server-side code. So when we look at the server-side code, it's we get current context. We actually get that token helper that's using to establish so that we can now call back into SharePoint for anything that we need to get access to. And in this case, you'll notice that we've got kind of current user calls. So we've got the token helper. We get the current context. We make the web calls. We get the current user. And then we execute that query. Now we can reference that current user in our .NET code. The one thing to note, if you ran this on-premise and you ran what's called, we call a high trust or an S2S application. So if you want to do high trust, your AD-based application, you can do an S2S. And it's just a change in here. So if I go S2S, you see that get access token with Windows identity. That's the one change that you'd have to make if you go dev tenant versus on-premise and you're deploying it completely on-premise. Then you want to do an S2S trust and you want to use a Windows identity for the user as opposed to trying to get that OAuth user on there. You could actually do OAuth as well if you're doing a hybrid config. But just be aware that there's an S2S call if you want to do an AD secured application. It's a high trust app is what we call it.
S2S is just the acronym for server-to-server trust. So on-prem, as Nathan mentioned, the ACS call, there's got to be this kind of third-party broker that helps keep all these services in check and keeps the identities in sync between these guys. Server-to-server trust, what it does is it allows SharePoint servers to talk to each other and external applications to talk to SharePoint. It establishes that that trust process through using the OAuth mechanisms. But here what we're saying is I need a server-to-server token based on the Windows identity. Go get me that. And that's what that call does. When you're in the cloud, it's different because your identity's somewhere else.
All right, so now that we, so say we've done the deployment or we've done the, we've tested it, we've debugged it, now we're ready to package it. We can actually go into now our project itself, and then we want to publish it. So if we go to the publish, this is where we talk about that corporate catalog, where okay, I've done my testing, I've done my development. Now I actually want to deploy it. You're not going to really do that deployment from Visual Studio. What you're going to do is package it. So if you're used to kind of doing the SharePoint packaging or the SharePoint solutions, it really is the kind of the same type of thing. So you notice on here we have a little packaging wizard. So regardless of kind of the application that you're doing, we actually go through a packaging wizard. And we package it up. We package any of the artifacts, whether it be in the different hosting environments. In this case, this package is actually, it's an auto-hosted. So we're packaging up the database. We're packaging up the web server or website. And we're actually putting that all in a solution package, giving it instructions on where to deploy and host everything. So you see on here, I've got an app package that I would basically hand that over to Israel. And Israel would deploy that on the catalog. And just to kind of show you what's inside there, I'll change it to a zip file. So when I open up that package, you'll see that I actually have my full website. It's actually packaged in there as well. So that's the website solution that's packaged in there. I also have my WSP. So my SharePoint project, the WSPs didn't go away. We actually just have more wrapping around it. So for deployment capabilities and permissions, we needed to actually have the WSP in there, but we had to put permissions in there as well. And then we actually have any of the SQL scripts or the DAC packages for our SQL server to actually get deployed into our environment as well. So now this gives us full ability to have SQL data if we want to ship that with it. We can do all that in there as well. Okay, so I'd hand that app package off to Israel. Israel could deploy that into his corporate catalog.
Where am I? I'll flip back here. Okay. All right, the last thing we wanted to touch on was the we call cloud-hosted app lifecycle. And the idea here is, if I'm building these auto-hosted applications, what if my application grows? How do I figure out, from a tenancy standpoint, from isolation, how do I isolate my tenants from each other, especially if I want to make money, right, from a licensing standpoint? So me as an app developer, I don't look like that, but I could look like that. I'm going to take my application. I'm going to deploy it. I built it however I wanted. I built it on Azure. I may have built it using Apache, PHP. I've got an app, and I want to deploy it to the store. Tenant admin goes ahead and deploys that. They deploy it to their app catalog. Site owner goes ahead and installs this application. Once they install this application, what happens on the back end, like it's an auto-hosted application, on the back end what I'm going to get is an app database and a website. So similar to what Nathan just showed of what got deployed, this is what happens behind the scenes. Well, the next sign owner comes along. He happens to install this as well from the app catalog. Behind the scenes, what we do is we spin up another website and app database. Depending on your app, this might be okay, right? Every single site owner is isolated to their own website and app database. Well, now I want to turn around and make it available to the store. Another tenant comes along. They go ahead and go to the store, and they deploy this same application. Well, behind the scenes, I get another website and app database. Me as an application developer and application owner, I might decide that I've grown out of this, right? I don't want to spin up multiple databases. I might want to share some information in my database. I might want to have just a single website to deploy. I don't want to just have these things spun up. So I want to convert it to a provider-hosted app. Bring your own server to work, or bring your own server to work, as Kirk Evans calls it, or bring your own architecture. So in this case, what I'm going to do is I'm now going to deploy a single website with a single app database. This is the provider-hosted model. The thing with this, though, is what you have to remember is now you have to manage tenancy in your own environment. You've got to figure out, how do I isolate different site owners? So the gentleman with the haircut versus the lady with the hat. How do I separate their needs? How do I separate their information? How do I make sure that I provide isolation? So in the first scenario, auto-hosted, everything's isolated. Everyone gets their own website. Everyone gets their own database. In this case here, I've got provider-hosted. I now have to manage that tenancy. Depending on my application, first model might work, may not work. If it doesn't work, I can use this provider hosted model, and I build my tenancy in my application. If you want to know more about tenancy, again, go to the Friday's talk, because they'll go deeper into how they manage tenancy for their application. But we want to just give you a hint of what is it you need to think about when you're building your applications specifically related to tenancy. All right, what we did was we walked through. Hopefully developers were happy. They got to see some code. We got to see some JavaScript. We hopefully showed the HTML people that it is possible to build SharePoint applications now. They don't have to be afraid. From an IT pro standpoint, we talked a little bit about purchasing of apps and deploying apps, how end users actually get apps deployed. We talked about different permissions and security model. And deployment, you get the .app package, you take that .app package. If you're on-prem, you deploy it to your on-prem app catalog. If you're in the cloud, you deploy it to your cloud app catalog and make it available to your end users. Some additional related content. Nathan mentioned earlier, there's some hands-on labs downstairs. There's additional talks that were happening here at TechEd. If they've happened already, you can catch them on Channel 9. If you want to review our talk or go look at our slides, they will be available on Channel 9. Also, TechEd North America, there were some talks that may not be here in TechEd Europe, so you can go back on Channel 9 and actually review those as well on Channel 9. There's a URL for Channel 9.
Yeah, and I would say that if you want any of the dev information, the dev.office.com is a really good resource for actually getting examples and different types of dev scenarios as well.
And with that, we're going to open it up for questions. Yes, sir.
We've got a 2010 webcast. What should we know just work, but should we be looking to upgrade those? And the
question is, what do I do with my 2010? Yeah. What do I do with my 2010 web parts?
So when I talk to customers about it, it really depends. It depends on what the applications or what the web part's doing. There might be scenarios where you're just going to want to, you know, just quickly port those. And actually just have that go. We actually did assembly redirection again, so those should really just work. And I've seen a lot of success of just porting those. If you're building net new stuff, that's when you gotta kind of start thinking about what makes sense. The other thing is on the Channel 9, they actually did on the relaunch of the dev.office, they did a porting web parts series of how to do that or why and when. Mm-hmm. So you might want to check that out as well. But I think it's a business call more than anything else.
Yeah, if you're not moving to 2013 for a while, or you're not moving to the cloud for a while, but you're building web parts or you're actively working on web parts, one thing that you might want to think about is getting your services up to date.
Yeah.
Getting service layers, start building that service interaction, start building that architecture where you're separating more of your data and architecture, some of the stuff that we did back in, 2000?
Yeah.
We did service-oriented architecture, right? Start looking at those type of things where separating your user interface. You can still do that on 2010,
yeah.
But now what that does is it makes you architecturally able to move quicker to 2013.
And I would say if you can move faster to 2013, and I would move fast, and then maybe you've got both models now that you can actually choose from and kind of mm-hmm. peg. So, yep. Any other questions?
Yes.
That's correct. And actually,
the question is auto-hosted. Can I use it on-prem, or is it only for Office 365?
That's right. Auto-hosted is only for Office 365 hosting. The new Azure websites that were launched and deployed are actually identical to how auto-hosting works. So if you did want to do an on-prem and have that hosted elsewhere in kind of an auto-hosted type of way, the websites is how I'd guide you. It's actually probably the most equivalent to that type of scenario. For on-prem, the code base and the project base is actually identical to provider-hosted versus auto-hosted for scenarios for on-prem. That's it, yep. So change the option, and then there's a deployment on the on-prem that you'd have to specify which server is this website going to.
Yep. Question here? So the question is, once I have my application deployed and I have data in my application, how do I then go back and collect it or mine it or do some information gathering on that? So that one's interesting. The thing you have to think about is the app web that you deploy to SharePoint, that's temporary storage. That's storage that, for example, caching. If the list went away, my application might still work, right? If the list somehow got deleted and then put back. So for things like that, if you know that you want to capture some archive data or some audit data right away, take it, use that app web as a temporary store. Maybe it's a high latency backend or you want to stage that, but then take some code and actually push that off to more permanent storage. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
And then you do the data mining somewhere else.
And keep in mind, provider-hosted model, I mean, you've got your backend, it would be SQL or Oracle or whatever you're using, and mm-hmm. so you're going to have access to that. So that's not going to go away.
Yep.
So. So the question is on the throttling side. That actually is a good point. On the one thing I forgot to mention on the auto-hosted side is there is a kind of a throttling mechanism, which is kind of the size that we provision of the websites. Same with provisioning of the websites itself. So the website provisioning, there's kind of a throttle on that side. As far as if you can go completely on-prem, any kind of throttling would happen on the host side itself. The host side of your application mm-hmm. is what would really kind of control that throttling.
So here what I did was I just went to my tenant admin. On my tenant admin, I have a little option called apps. And then there's an option here called monitor apps. So if you have kind of these misbehaving applications where I don't know what this application is doing, what's happening with this application, I can click on monitor apps. And when I get into monitor apps, I get access to all my different apps. And I can see a little bit about, is this app throwing a bunch of errors? What's happening with the application? But the thing to remember is that the code isn't actually running on my farm. So as an IT pro, if you're looking at your server and you're talking to the end user, the joke I always have is, okay, hit refresh. Nope, server's fine. Hit refresh. Nope, server's fine. Right? I'm not seeing that traffic on my side unless they're calling into SharePoint. But a lot of that's happening somewhere else. So if it's misbehaving, you can shut it off. You can see what it's doing. You can actually remove it completely from your farm and block it so that you don't allow other end users to add it. So there's definitely some tools there.
And there's definitely a framework there for developers to have the login and have the monitoring hooks into it.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a question back? Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you. All right, we'll be around for a little bit. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
And the first two that had the questions, if you want to come up, I'll give you the codes for the access to the custom themes if you want.
Yep. All right, thank you.
Thanks.